Hello, Nikki speaking.
Hello, Nikki Moffat. It's Kirsty.
Hello, Kirsty Rice. How are you? How's Australia?
Oh, it's pretty good. As we speak, it's Wednesday before the Easter break. So, you know, Australia's got that sort of Easter feel about it, where there's Easter eggs everywhere and hot cross buns in the bakery and camping equipment advertised on every corner.
That's a funny thing about Australia. Camping at Easter, it's a thing, isn't it?
It's almost compulsory.
How's that new house of yours? Still living the dream in the dream house?
Yep, living the dream, but also the reality. I came home to the first water bill, the first electricity bill, the first realisation of how long it takes to clean the bloody place.
Oh, you'll have to get G on the email about the bill. Hey, listen, you're never going to believe who I interviewed this week when you were travelling in transit about their volunteer role in a school in the Netherlands. You've really got to listen to the interview to believe it.
Okay. Shall we talk about it in the podcast?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's make a podcast.
Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie expat based in Qatar, and welcome back to our new and improved Two Fat Expats podcast, where we talk about all things expat, screwing up our expat children, finding the best locations to live, and not blowing our expat dough. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
I am just fine, although I just looked out the window and you wouldn't be the start of a podcast without a weather update, and it's freaking snowing.
I mean, one of the joys of Facebook when they're not stealing your private identity is seeing your friends around the world with snow and hail and, oh my God, roll on summer and all those updates.
And then seeing your Instagram stories with, oh, here I am at the beach. It's not really the right weather for my SUP, but I'll just sit here anyway. I say to you. Okay, geographically challenged. How are we geographically challenged this week, Kirsty?
Well, you know that with two children in one country and two children in another, I'm always geographically challenged. But this week I feel particularly more so. You know, most weeks I just take it for what it is and know that I have two big kids at school in Australia and two smaller kids at school in Qatar. But this week I did a bit of tag parenting with my husband because he travelled and when he flew in, I flew out. And by doing that, I missed my children in Qatar. I missed their parent teacher so that I could get to Australia in time to have meetings with teachers in the Australian school. Do you know, and I guess I'm feeling a bit fractious about that. You know, I'm looking at prom pictures of my eldest daughter's class in Qatar, but of course she's not at prom because she's now at school in Australia and we're talking about what she's going to wear to her formal. And it all sort of feels a little bit jumbled and all over the place.
Oh, but can I ask a question about that? Because I saw some formal photos from Adelaide the other night and everyone was wearing handkerchiefs. Is she going to wear a full dress or a handkerchief and a skirt?
Now, do you mean like handkerchiefs as in a two-piece kind of deal going
That's
on?
That's correct.
And the top half just sort of hangs down in a triangle covering your bosies and your belly button? Is that what you mean?
No, there was not a lot of belly button coverage, but yes, there was more like a bandana.
I would, funnily enough, I would be quite happy for her to wear that because I think she looks amazing in that sort of stuff, but she is far more sensible than I. And maybe I'm happy for her to wear that because I never could have worn that. Do you know, I never had abs of steel. She somehow was born with them. Doesn't take after my side of the family, that's for sure. But no, she is wearing a very pretty dress and it's all one length, so yes, all one solid piece of material. But I wonder if she'll let me share a photo with everyone when it all happens. So let's do that. I'll do that. And of course, my beautiful story of my eldest going to prom is she's actually going with one of my best friend's sons who is born on the same day as her, and they've obviously known each other all their lives, and they're going as mates, and that is kind of particularly sweet. And I do have to remind myself of these things when I'm getting sad about her not being in Qatar. It's like, well, this wouldn't have happened had you not come to Australia. We wouldn't have been able to all have this experience.
True. And what else? What else is on the agenda this week?
Well, I think one thing, Nikki, that's a bit geographically freaky with you and I don't know if we've ever explained to people sort of how we met or how we came together, but one very freaky thing that is happening this weekend for me is I'm going back to my hometown where I grew up for a 50th birthday party. And at that birthday party will be your sister-in-law.
I know, that is freaky.
So, Nikki, you and I met online. We, not in kind of a Tinder way, but more in a...
No, I'm a Twitter. I was a blog fangirl.
And so
you, I own it.
But you also had a blog of your own. So we talked about, we talked about that. And, you know, we kind of became Twitter friends and then Facebook friends. And then you had mentioned that your husband was originally from Adelaide, where I went to school and where a lot of my friends are from. And then we kind of worked out that your husband and I were really about the same age. And then it kind of worked out that, oh, we know lots and lots of the same people. And I had met your sister-in-law, you know, years and years ago, and knew her husband and whatever. But I mean, those worlds have never really intertwined. But yes, this weekend I will be going to a party in little old Renmark, and your sister-in-law will be there. So what can I?
Oh, and so will my brother-in-law and all my nieces. So, I think the nieces aren't allowed to come to the party. They'll just be on the houseboat, though, down on the river.
I'm lucky I've got Granny to look after our kids while the party's going down. But, yes, it is a party of epic proportions. I believe it's going for 2 days. So I will only be partaking in a few of hours of that party if I know what's good for me.
Well, I'll be very interested to hear the update and see what's going on.
Oh, me too.
And if there's any bandana dresses.
So, Nikki, let's move on to expat tech.
Sure. So this week we've actually had a lot of chatter on the Facebook group about jobs that you can do remotely and carry with you, so a portable career, so to speak. So, Kirsty, you have one of those. Your boss is in Australia, but your work colleagues are spread out pretty much far and wide geographically, and no one's in the same office in real life, right?
Yeah.
So we wanted to talk this week about what kind of tools you can use when you work from home.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, a lot of people always ask me how I got my job as well, and I work for someone in Australia who I guess is a bit of a celebrity, and he's known as the why are you laughing?
Well, because you're a bit of celebrity in another world and he's a celebrity in that world.
I am so not a celebrity.
People say to me all the time, oh, my God, what's Kirsty Light Rice like in real life?
They do not. Okay, so my boss was looking for someone back in the day to do a bit of editing work and online community stuff, and someone who knew about podcasting and writing online and that sort of world. And I had started a few years previous to that doing that sort of work just on my own. So when I moved to Qatar and I realized I couldn't work in the field that I had been working in previously, I started writing and really just sort of taught myself some skills through doing that and working through people and becoming connected in sort of a network of people that work like that. When he was looking for someone suggested my name. So that's all great, but then it comes to day one of work and you're thinking, okay, well, I know how I work, but how does this organisation work, and how do I communicate with everybody, and how does that all happen without it costing me a fortune, or how do you maintain those relationships with people, and how do things not get missed? So how it works for us is we all use Slack, which is an app that you can use on your phone, but also on your laptop or desktop. And Nikki, you and I use Slack as well. And
we do.
Yes. And so how we use it, our work, and what is so fabulous about it is it eliminates a gazillion emails that go back and forth between people of, are you going to do this? And is this going to happen now? And okay, I'll get on to that. And all right, let's do this now. And things getting lost. On Slack, you can set up many different channels and itemize all the things that you're going to talk about. So, Nikki, you and I do it when we interview people. We'll grab that file and then put that file in Slack under interviews and episodes and things. And then we'll have a general channel where we'll talk as well. And that's sort of how it works with my boss. We talk in the customer service channel. We might talk in a members channel. Like we can talk in a design channel about things that we're putting out, or have a forum channel for our forum. So that's a great way of us communicating. We also have regular meetings on Zoom. So Zoom works well for us because we can have sort of five or six different people on the call, and it seems to, the quality of that call seems to work better, and it's absolutely free. So there's no someone having to dial in from their mobile and it costing them money, which sometimes happens on Skype. And we live and die by Google Docs. We do.
Yes, we do.
Everything. So in all forms of my work. And I've found out I love Google Docs so much that I get completely frustrated when other people don't use Google Docs. Have you found that, Nikki?
How can you not? How can you not use Google Docs? I mean, I just assume everyone uses Google Docs. And then I'm like, if I send them an invitation, they say, oh, sorry, I don't have Google Docs. I'm like, who are you and how do I know you?
What other things? I noticed you had some things on there for podcasts.
Yeah, so I work on a couple of other podcasts as well. That's work I've also got into after we've started this. So people knew that I was involved in this and have asked me for help with them. And so I use Slack as well. I also use Trello for list making, which is also, it's a free app and it's kind of a mini project app, but it's also very good just for list making and checking out lists. And one of the groups I work with also use Freedcamp, which is also a free project management app. It's online and I don't love it, but it's pretty basic and easy to use. So
have you used Asana?
I haven't used Asana. I've looked at Asana and suggested, hey, maybe we should move to Asana, but I'm not going to commit unless I'm working on a project.
Yeah.
So I don't want to just learn about it for fun in my free time. I've got better things to do. But maybe I'll have a look at that and then I can suggest a migration. But do you use Asana for work?
Yes, we do. We do use Asana and I do really like it. I've tried to use Trello. I think you and I tried to use Trello for a little while there, didn't we? And didn't really work. But I think Asana can work for me. But I do sort of struggle with any of those project management apps. It's not my strong point, but Asana I can do.
Okay. Yes. So technology big in the news this week and recently, obviously, Facebook is another tool that we use. We have a Facebook group full of people we love. Hello, Facebook people.
Hello, people in Facebook group. God, I love that Facebook group.
Yeah, I love it too. And there's loads of good stuff in there all the time. But something I saw today, I was reading an article and I saw somebody say, hey, have you seen how much information Facebook has about you for the ads? And, you know, that's the things you target and you're reading along, you go, God, how did Facebook know this about me? And so I followed the instructions in the article and it said, go here and here and here. And it told me where to go. And it's an ad category. You go to general account settings and there's a list that says on the left-hand side that says ad. So you click on that and then you go through in within that, you go to something called your info and it's a green tab on my Facebook. And oh my goodness, I had to look in there and I was like, Facebook know a lot of stuff about me.
Yes.
They've got me tagged for all these things. And I just, it's crazy, but it's all true. They know what kind of phone I have. Yes. They have listed me as the exact phone I have. They've listed me as a living away from home. They've listed me as my birthday in June. Well, I do have my birthday on Facebook, so that's fine. They say I'm a close friend of expats.
Yes.
And I am an expat. They say things like I'm an early adopter of technology. I'm like, oh, I'm pretty happy with that, Facebook thinks. They talk about the type of way I access Facebook. They say I'm a parent of teenagers. You know, like it's just nuts. It's crazy. But, you know, I think that's probably true because it's all information I probably have shared at one point or another on Facebook. And I am one of the people that say, look, if you don't know what Facebook, what information has Facebook has about you, you know, you probably should delete your account because if you're putting information on Facebook, they're going to have it. I mean, that's what data mining is. And if you're putting data on there, they're going to keep it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's my kind of attitude. Like, I'm not going to be deleting my account. I might shut down some of my settings more or whatever, but I'm going to stay on Facebook for now. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I had someone ask me that recently, just this week. Someone said to me, are you going to shut down your Facebook account? And I was like, nah. I just, for me, I think we have shared so much information, like all of us, whether it's, you know, like I love it when people say, oh, I'm going to shut down my Facebook account, but I love Instagram. And it's like, you do know Instagram is owned by Facebook and they're sharing all that stuff as well. Do you know, every time we click on these things and look at these things and use these free apps and free things, it is costing us our information. Now, am I frightened of anyone seeing those things? No, not really, because I don't, when I think about the things I do, or what's said in a message or whatever, I think I'm pretty safe.
Yeah, look, I do too. And there are things, so people get hacked and your information gets stolen. It gets stolen from banks. It gets stolen from all sorts of places. So, I mean, it's sad but true, and it's really shitty.
Yes.
And it really messes up your life. I heard a thing the other day saying it takes 28 hours of your life to resolve an issue if your identity is stolen.
Oh, God.
I think that was on the In Case You Missed It podcast,
Kirsten, yes.
I was listening to. But it was just one of those things. And I thought, yeah, that's true. And it is bad. And I was looking at a website the other day that I was interested in joining, and it asked me a lot of questions. And I thought, you know what? I provide a lot of this information to other places, but in this case, it's a small website. It's a startup. I don't really know how secure this information is. Sure, my information gets stolen from other places, but I don't feel comfortable sharing this information here.
Yes.
And so
yeah.
I just stopped my membership. I said, okay, I'm not going to join because I don't want to provide this information.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right, Nikki. I think that's probably why I'm not too worried, because I think I've written a lot of stuff online, right? If anyone really wants to go and really know about me, that all they'd have to do is go to the blog and go, oh yeah, she's got four kids, she's got, pardon the pun, 22 kids and a beagle, she's got you know, a house in Australia. You could probably work out where it is if you were willing to try hard enough. You know, they would know about my hometown. There would be a lot of stuff that someone could, if they tried hard enough, glean from me. But I think we're all fairly precarious in that world now. I don't know. I guess when you've been on this technology for a while and you've worked as a Facebook admin and you've been involved in the world of Facebook ads and seen it, you kind of go, maybe that makes you feel less worried because you realize the worst thing that's happening here is people are trying to sell me things. Do you know?
Yeah, I
get it with banks. When people are trying to tap into banks and do all of that, I totally get it. Like that's terrible and bad and awful. But yeah, if it's people just data mining for what they're going to target the ads to, I kind of prefer it than flicking through the ads that I have no interest in and don't want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And so I just like to say that I'm keeping my Facebook account for now and my Instagram because, you know, they are linked. Yeah, I don't know how that would work. Relationships. So expat relationships.
Tell me about yours. What's happening with your expat relationship?
Well, I worked on some expat relationships this week. I went to book club, even though I didn't finish the book. And I met some other, some new friends, which was very lovely. We had a Colombian hostess and there were some Americans there because it was the American Women's Club book club, and a South African lady and a Danish lady. So I felt very international. And I missed it. And I've made it a point to say that I really want to sort of make more friends and build relationships here in my hometown. And so I missed an opportunity last week. We are never invited anywhere ever. Like, we don't really go out a lot. And so I had said that I was going to go to this cooking club. And then my husband came home and said, oh, no, we've got a dinner that on Saturday night. You can't go to that, because I was advising him of the weekend activities. So I had to miss it, but I missed cooking club. Now, have you ever been to a cooking club meeting, Kirsty?
Because no, I'm excited, but I didn't. I remember you and I talking about this before.
Yeah. So no, I think we talked about baking club. So in Hamburg, we have a baking club and a cooking club. You know, we're big deal here. We have lots of things. So with cooking club, the hostess chooses a cookbook and then you all cook a recipe from the cookbook and then you all get together and eat it. Sounds pretty good to me. But what about you?
Okay.
Relationships?
No, well, of course, I'm back in Australia, your expat relationships suddenly feel a gazillion miles away when you get back home. My husband and two boys arrive tomorrow night, which I'm absolutely busting for. But I tell you one thing that did happen today that does not happen in your expat world is I rang a girlfriend and to say, hey, you know, what's happening with this weekend? And told her I was meeting someone else. Do you want to come along? She said, no, I've got to get back to work. I've just been at a funeral. Oh, and I'm sorry. That's terrible. How are you? You okay? Yep. And whose funeral was it? And, you know, let's just call him John Smith. You know, it was John Smith. I said, oh. And she said, do you know him? And I said, oh, did you work with him? And she goes, no. You know, he's just one of those guys that everybody knows. And I had that moment of, I don't know him. and that, you know, that is not an expression you would say in the expat world, is it? You would not say to your expat friend, you know, oh, you know that guy? Yeah, he's just one of those guys that everybody knows, because we're all transient and we're all moving all the time, and, you know, it would always warrant an explanation. So I was just thinking things like that sort of trip me up every now and again when I'm home of, no, I've kind of missed the last 20 years of everyday stuff that I don't know absolutely everybody that you know. Yeah.
And that's right, because you think you're involved in the culture because you read newspapers online, you listen to podcasts, you watch TV shows, but it's that really everyday nitty-gritty stuff that you really just still can get floored by, just totally just bang.
Yeah, totally, totally. But I want to talk about expat kids because I want to hear about your interview, Nikki, because all I can see written in front of me is the lice mother.
Oh, my God. It was the best ever. I was just spending some time working on Facebook and I came across somebody who had said in a Facebook comment that she'd just come home from school and she'd done her lice mother duties. And I said, I don't know who you are, but I need to interview you because I want to know about being a lice mother. So I think the best thing to do is to listen to the interview so we can all learn together about lice mothers.
My husband is Dutch.
Right.
And so, like I said, when we got here, my children had never been in school before. So they started mainstream Dutch school here. And of course, you know, there's all kind of things to get used to and discover. And I put my hand up for decorating the school for Christmas. And I did that. And the very next day I came into school and I realized everything that I had done was redone. Okay. So I decided, stuff this, I'm not putting my hand up for anything else. And but the kids have been harassing me. And then Scarlett came home one day and she said, oh, Mama, the Lousy mother were in school today. And I said, what's that? And she said, oh, Mama's come in and they check all our hair for lice. Oh, Jesus, that's an awful job. And then I talked to my husband about it and he said, oh, yeah, They do it after the after every school holiday. So after the summer vacation, the midterm, Christmas, all of the vacations, the day one, every child in school gets their hair checked. Look, in theory, it's a really, really good it's a really good thing to do, but it's absolutely gross. Now, there is a huge lice problem in the schools here, and it's only done at Bassa School, which is the primary school. And of course, nobody puts their hand up for the job because it's gross. So the app, the one of a million apps came out, we need help with this and this and this. And I thought, okay, the lice mother, shall I do it? Because I don't have to communicate with anybody. All I have to do is look, tick a box, and the children won't dislike me. So I thought, okay, I'll try that. And you know, typically it was one of the head honcho mothers who was coordinating the whole affair. And it was an impromptu lice check because one of the classes that we were in was heavily infested, which I didn't know beforehand. So I rock up to school yesterday morning and I meet the head honcho mother, and she's quite lovely, actually. And she said, oh, we're going to this class now, and this child are really have a lot of lice. And my thoughts were, hey, why the hell are they even in school? If they've checked them and they still have lice, you know, this is an ongoing problem. Can they not be sent home until, you know, the lice is gone? But no, they're in school. And their hair is down and flying away. And I thought, ugh, I started itching. So we went into the small class and we checked. And you have to, the children are like little soldiers. They're great. They sit there and they put their head forward. And the little ones with the hair that are tied up, you know, they tell you that you can take their hair down. And you have to have a good old root in their hair. There's a, you know, how you check for lice. It's disgusting.
Is there any kind of like any training? Is there a lice mother program?
No, nothing. It's just come and put their hair forward and check. It's quite thorough, I will say. You don't just have a quick look. You do have to literally, you know, do a really good check all around the edges, all in the middle. Give their scalp a bit of a scratch if if there's something that appears to be that it shouldn't be there. So, you know, it might be dry skin or it could be some kind of knit eggs or something. Give it a scratch. That's what I was told. And tick the box if the child has no lice. So I started and I positioned myself. Interestingly, the three girls who had the lice were all sitting together, and I positioned myself at the table away from those three girls. So I got mostly boys, and I started to check, and they were all lovely, and nobody was scratching, but I was scratching. There's no gloves, there's no knit comb, it's with your bare fingers, and you go through each child's hair. And the teacher will stand there and point and tell you if a child has had lice in the past.
Oh.
It's not for the faint-hearted. And as a child, I don't know if the child really realizes, you know, that it's something that's quite disgusting, but they don't seem to care anyway.
And what happens if you find a child with lice?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, then you all whisper with the mothers, this child has lice. And you have to fill out this form. And one parent, one of the lice mothers, takes it upon herself to ring the mother and tell the mother she is to come and take the child home and treat it. Now, I believe next week we're back again for the follow-up of the follow-up. For the lice checking. But the kidder was, you know, then if you have a child who has lice and they have siblings in the school, then you get to go and check all the siblings and their class as well. So what started off as a one class of lice checking turned into three classes. And my daughter happened to be in one of the classes I ended up having to check. And she was like, Mama, we don't do, the lousy mothers don't come in until after the school holidays, but this is before school holidays, you know, and she's seven. So I don't want to say to her, well, actually, Jim over here, his head is crawling. you try to be a little bit politically correct about it. But afterwards, then the lice mothers gather downstairs and we check off our lists and decide who's going to call the parent. And That's it, really. Well, that's... You wash your hands and you come home and you disinfect yourself. The only thing that kept me going was the fact that my husband told me that Queen Maxima, who's the Dutch queen, is a lice mother in her school. And I think, well, if it's good enough for her, it's good enough for me.
Oh, my God, that is hysterical. My favourite bit was when she heard the Queen was a lice mother and so if it was good enough for her. Now, my only thing about this, Nikki, is in the article, because you had sent me an article to say, you know, this is the lice mother. It said, this is how the Dutch get rid of head lice. So I was waiting to hear in your interview how they got rid of them, but it sounds like they don't really get rid of them at all, that is a false headline.
Headline. I see what you did there. No, what they do is, as in, they enlist the public to do it for them. Yeah. They don't have to, the school nurse doesn't have to cop it all. And I'm scratching my head as I'm saying this because now I've got an itchy head.
Now, are you a mother that loves to take head lice out of kids' hair? Because that, to me, I would happily go in and do that at school. Happily.
Yeah, I don't know. I was traumatized by an incident in the US where I got lice from my children and I had to go to the headhunter's lice extradition hair salon twice for lice extractions in my very long, very thick hair. And it took me a month to stop scratching my head. The lice were gone long before a month, but I couldn't get over it. So I'm not sure. I did forget to ask whether hair nets were required as you were delousing.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure I could go in and be that mother. I think I still have to be, I don't know, the class party mother or something. I'd rather do something else than lice mother. But if you want to do it, the Netherlands should be on your list then as a place to live.
No, I do. Look, I get annoyed by head lice in the whole that they stay. It's so hard to get rid of them. But I do love a little hunt, do you know, and just pulling out that winning feeling of getting those eggs out. And, of course, I do feel I'm now an expert, like so many people do after they've, you know, won the battle. But yes, I'm the woman who arrived in a new country with four young children. We flew into Houston. So we'd been living in Canada. We went home for the Christmas in Australia. We moved to Houston in the January. I think we did something ridiculous, like arrived on the Saturday, picked up school uniforms and whatever on the Sunday and started school on the Monday. You know, one of those kind of moves where you go to school from the hotel room and you quickly then you drop your kids off at school, drive to Super Target to pick up lunch boxes, make lunch in the car park and then deliver it back to school. You know, no stress with your two-year-old, on your hip. But I can remember dropping the kids off, pick them up. We went back to the hotel and I was in front of the bathroom mirror in the hotel and literally pulled out a massive knit from my hair, like massive, big enough that I pinched it in my fingers and went, oh my God, I've got head lice. And then checked the kids and we all had head lice. I had sent my children
to
school.
In a hotel?
Yes. And I had sent them to school very first day, brand new school, all riddled with head lice. So, yes, that was my joy, and it did. That was when, you know, kids got all their hair cut off. They went from being girls with very long hair to lovely short bobs. Boys were completely deloused, everyone. But, yeah, it takes a long time to get rid of head lice when the whole family's got it.
Yes, especially when they're already, like, big ones walking around your head.
Okay, we're going to talk about expat money.
We are. And this week you promised to tell us about the categories, all the P names for your bank accounts.
Right. So if you've had a chance to listen to the bonus episode, you would have heard G and I going through kind of our feelings about where the money situation was with us. G gave me feedback and said he did really like the way that I said that I had distanced myself from our money situation. He thought that that was a very good way of describing it. But I was given two jobs, and that was to get into the bank accounts and make a transaction and to cancel a credit card. And I have done both of those things. So we are off to a flying start. But the other thing I wanted to look at this week is the automation of our accounts and what we were going to call them. And I wanted it to be something that suited our expat life and something that kind of stuck with me, so that while I'm working out where the money should go, it all makes sense. So I turned them all into P's. We have the payday account, the pair account, the poolside account, and the parachute account. I have the payday for our everyday spending and our bills, and that goes into our payday account of what we've got to sort of, you know, pay off that month. I have the pair account, which is 3 months of living expenses in case everything goes pear-shaped, which is an expression that I use. I don't know if that expression makes its way across the world, but when things go pear-shaped, it kind of means things have turned a bit wobbly and for the worst. So I want to make sure that we've got 3 months of living expenses in case anything can go, in case anything does go wrong. I've got the poolside account, which is the holiday account, because one of my personal things for me is while we go back and forth between our house in Australia and to see the kids in Australia and back to Qatar, we really haven't as a family focused on what our holiday would be, you know, because we're spending so much on airfares and the back and forth here and getting set up. Now that we've got the house done, I'd really like to focus on just, even if it's a tiny little bit, I want to put a tiny little bit away for holidays each month. And I've got the parachute account because that's the pull the cord, that's the real emergency. So while a lot of people have the 3 months of living expenses, I think expats really need to have that complete emergency where, shit, we've got to get on a plane right now. Do you know, like something's happened, there's been a medical emergency, I've got to get home to my mum, or there's been a coup, we've got to get to the airport, or, you know, it's for whatever reason.
There's an earthquake.
Yep, there's an earthquake, you know, and we've all seen it in our expat lives. And that parachute account, that's the one that has to be completely separate from anything. It cannot be attached to a credit card. It cannot be attached to a debit card. It has to just be, you either have to go into the bank to get it or you've got to go online to sort of move the money, because you don't want anything bad to happen to that emergency account. Anyway, I am putting all of these things in Don't Blow Your Dough. There's one thing that anyone in the Middle East might be saying, hang on, you've forgotten, and that's the check account, because many of us in the Middle East have to pay our rent by check. That's just the way it works. I know it sounds crazy, but that's just how it is. Checks just don't really exist in Australia anymore. They still very much exist in the US, don't they? And they're still.
Oh, the Americans, big fan of the check. Big fan.
I think people would actually give you the side eye in Australia if you suggested paying by check these days.
I'll give you a check. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I bet you will. So, yeah, that's just the start. If anyone's interested in knowing more, please come over to Don't Blow Your Dough and we can talk about it more. I'll be doing another bonus episode with Greg this week while we go through it and working out how that all looks for us and how successful we were with the whole idea and getting it automated. It's going to be really interesting seeing it's Easter.
Can do it on a chocolate high.
Yes,
chocolate high.
Yes.
Hey, I have one question, and I don't know if you're going to cover this in the bonus episode or if this is something we can talk about now. Where are these accounts physically based? So are they based in Qatar or in Australia or somewhere else?
We can go through that more in the bonus episode, but okay. Just for me personally, just quickly, Nikki, we don't like to keep money in Qatar for the reason of if anything was to happen to G, our accounts would get immediately frozen in Qatar. So we tend to move it all back to Australia, but that is us and our choice. And I know that that would not apply to everyone. But if my suggestion would be, if you're living in a country where as a woman, you could not get your money if something was to happen to your partner, that maybe you wouldn't want to keep those accounts in that country.
That's a good tip.
Location, location, location. We're up to D. And Nikki, I believe you went to Durban.
I did. You know, I looked at all the locations and I thought there's some great ones here, but I just got suckered back down there because, you know, sunshine. Durban is, of course, famous for having 320 days a year of sunshine. So I spoke to Stephanie.
Hold it, hold it. You
Yep.
haven't told everyone
Sorry.
that you used to live in Durban.
I thought everybody knew I used to live in Durban. Hence my addiction to sunshine. I did used to live in Durban. And when I lived in Durban, Stephanie, who I spoke to, had just arrived. And as I was leaving, so we knew each other briefly in real life for a little while. And when she came up on the Facebook group and hit I lived in Durban, I thought, oh, she'd be a good person to ask about it, to ask the fat five questions. So I did that. So do you want to listen to Stephanie?
Yes, please.
Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your current level of in love with Durban?
Oh, that's a tough one. That's a really hard one for me to answer because I just got back from where my father and my sister live in Portland, Oregon. And I really like that city. And it's the first time in 20 years that both my close family is in the same place. I really enjoyed my time with them. I enjoyed the city of Portland, Oregon. And then I came back here and it's chaos. You're also, I was by myself. So it's a very hard question to answer because I have three children. And so when I was in Oregon visiting my family and where I consider home, I was very happy. And I didn't have the stresses that you have. I've had different stresses because I haven't a father who isn't so well. I had different stresses than I would say when you come back to the reality of three children, two dogs, and three cats. So, but that said, right now, as you're speaking to me, I'm sitting in the shade. It's 26 degrees out. There are birds chirping, and I can see the Indian Ocean. So, on that sense, it's a pretty good day. It's a really nice day. So I'd say let's give Durban an 8.5.
8.5. And what's your best local find?
I don't know. And that's the thing that I think Durban kind of lives in the shadows of Cape Town and Joburg, and that there are lots of little local finds. But I feel like I'm 7 years into this, and I don't know that I have local finds anymore because they're kind of like everybody has discovered them. No, but you know what? I will say that local find about Durban that I always say that I love about here is that it's proximity to the Indian Ocean. It's really my kids and myself. We go to the ocean a lot. They surf, they do nippers, life saving. So we enjoy that part. But the other thing that I love about Durban is that you get in your car and in 3 hours you can be at game reserves that are amazing. So you can go and see the big African wildlife or the big five, the African wildlife. But you can also in 2.5 hours be in mountains where you kind of feel like you're in the mountains, or you go 2.5 hours south and you're on the place called the Wild Coast, which is wild and very uninhabited and just beautiful in its own right. So to me, the localness of Durban is the availability of close weekend trips that you can do a lot. So I'm going to say that. Is that
That,
okay?
yeah, that is cool, and it's very, very true. So what drives you crazy?
Well, I think we all have stories. The thing that drives me crazy about South Africa is that in so many ways it can be a first world country. Its banking is amazing. It's easy to do banking things. You can live in a city where things are very, very much a kind of first world place. And then you have things that aren't, like when you go to renew your passport or you renew your visa for that umpteenth time because you can't get residency, even though you've been married to a South African for 10 years or whatever it might be. So it's just, it's caught in two worlds often, and that can just be really frustrating. And although apartheid supposedly died in 1994, I often find things still are so racial related here, and it drives me nuts. And I'm put cast into a light that I don't often sometimes agree with. And that can be really frustrating because people think I am a certain way until I open my mouth and say something. And then they realize that, no, I'm not that way. So it's hard. It can be hard to be stereotyped because of the color of your skin. And that happens on a daily basis.
Where's one place you'd love to live?
A place that I'd love to live? Well, I don't know. There are lots of places I'd love to visit. And that was always a hard question because my husband is from South Africa and I'm from the United States. And we met living in Miami, Florida, which neither of us really ever felt like home. And it's not a place that we would move back to. And so for right now, we're pretty happy, I have to say, in Durban. As we've often spoke about, Durban does have beautiful weather, and you forget how much that plays into your life and the fact that things are pretty good in as far as weather-wise, and the things that we enjoy doing are because we have warm weather. We've thought about that, even if where would we have moved in the United States if we were to move somewhere? I can't answer where I would love to live because there are many places I'd like to visit, but I haven't said, I can't say that there's a place that I would love to live necessarily.
That's a good one. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about your expat life or the way of life that you're living right now?
I started off this year telling myself not to sweat the small things, and that because we get so caught up in so many of these small things, and all the small things can suddenly become a big thing, and you really have to rein yourself in sometimes and say, okay, it's all right if that paint color is not the perfect one. It's just a paint color, or it's just a thing. It's not my life. It's not my health. And so I've just really kind of made that my mantra this year. And I keep telling myself that do not sweat those little things, because sometimes, yes, they are little things that do make you feel like it's a big thing, but it's not necessarily something you need to get so wrapped up into. And yeah, everything can, all the little things can seem so big, but once you kind of break them down and cross them off your list and deal with them, it's not too bad. And you have to remind yourself of that daily, because there are daily frustrations. And also, sometimes I think as expats, we blame our day-to-day problems on our location, where these day-to-day things would be happening wherever we are. But often we can say, oh, this is just South Africa, or, oh, this is just, that's the way of life of, oh, I don't speak German, or whatever it may be. But you might have that frustration where you live also. Like right now I'm going through a huge thing of choosing schools. Well, at some point I would probably have to choose schools in the United States or wherever I might be, but I'm putting it on South Africa, whereas at some point in my life I'll still have to change schools.
What's the biggest lesson that you've learned by living this kind of life?
I would just say patience, because but patience wherever you are. I've lived in Paraguay where things just didn't happen at all. And you just had to be patient because there's this mañana, mañana kind of atmosphere. I lived in Miami, which although it was the same country as where I was from, it was still a totally different culture, a totally different type of people than I was used to living, coming from the Pacific Northwest. And it's the same thing here, is also just patience and treat others how you want to be treated. A smile goes a long way, and to just be genuine, because often when you aren't genuine and you're fake, then people see through that and they're going to treat you the same way. So I always try and go back to that, like, you know, a smile and treat others how you want to be treated, because don't be demeaning to people, and a smile, just keep smiling.
Oh, lovely. Oh, I was so envious when she said she was sitting outside, you know, looking at the ocean, 26 degree day. And then I thought she could be in Australia.
But I could almost hear the sunshine when I was talking to her. Like, just you hear the birds and the way and the background, and it's like you can hear the sunshine. I was very, very jelly talking to her. But I thought she had some great things to say, and it's so true about Durban. I mean, I do rave on about other places I've lived a lot, but Durban is an amazing place. And what she said about everything being so close, like a 3-hour drive is actually quite close.
Wow.
If you're Australian, you think it's close. But all those places are just within sort of a very short distance from Durban. So yes, I think shout out to Durban. Miss you, Durbs. But
and yeah, it is far more exotic in Australia when it comes to wildlife and culture in that regard, isn't it?
Yes. Well, we think it's far more exotic, yes. But, you know, there are some people that think that kangaroos and koalas are exotic. So what can you say?
Yes.
Not South Africans, though.
So, Nikki, just before we go into books, movies, telly, podcasts, food, whatever we choose this week, I wanted to give a shout out to the lovely Stephanie, who has left us a few messages, but she left a couple this week that resonated. And number one, she tells us about a fantastic book to read, but she also touches on another subject. So I just want to have a listen to her first and then come back.
Hi again, ladies. My gosh, I'm leaving a lot of messages lately. You guys have really inspired me. You're filling in a niche in my expat listening podcast that I didn't even realize I had. So thank you. I went to a book reading this week for a book called Good Muslim Boy by Osama Sami, S-A-M-I. And the majority of the book is a really grim topic of, let's just put it this way. Osama and his father were in, although they were originally from the area and lived in Iran for a while, they left and immigrated to Australia for numerous reasons, but they went back to Iran years and years later as a father and son trip, like a travel, reconnect with your roots. And his father died, and a large part of the book was about the frustration, the bureaucracy, and the process of dealing with grief or putting grief on hold while Osama dealt with all of that stuff that happens. Now, Osama is now, quote unquote, from Australia. He immigrated there when he was a young teenager, and he's an Australian citizen. And it was the Australian government, I believe, that sent him to a literary festival in Shanghai, where I'm living. So it's sort of interesting, the Australian connection in all of this. But it brought me to an interesting thing. I've never heard anybody address in any of the expat podcasts or even a lot of the blogs that I read on what do you do, not just when you're traveling overseas, but when you're living overseas and your spouse or a loved one passes away. What are the logistics that go into that? And gosh, I mean, just the thought of what to do and where to go and how to, like, dealing with the body in the book that I mentioned is just a nightmare scenario. I kept thinking of my husband here with me in Shanghai, and I just sent shivers down my spine for the 8 hours of the audiobook in a way that I just can't describe. So I know it's a grim topic, but I thought it was one I rarely hear anything about. And if you guys did an episode, a part of an episode on it, I think it'd be really, really useful, especially for planning purposes, so people aren't caught off guard. Because eventually, if you live overseas long enough, something happens to someone, right? Oh, what a thought. Anyway, I hope to leave more positive messages in the future. Thank you again. I love your podcast.
Okay, so Nikki, I can't remember how long ago it was that we did the expat death subject as a podcast, but we've kind of floated around this topic. We did, Sarah and I did an episode right at the beginning of our podcast about what to do in case of expat death, you know, and we kind of touched on sort of what happens money wise and what happened, you know, what you need to have organized and what you should have for a will. And I think it's definitely time to go back and revisit that, because I think that was really one of the first podcasts that Sarah and I had done. We've also talked about expat death in when we've talked about the death of a child, and we had that really harrowing episode with Jane Weeks, who lost the triplets in the Villaggio fire. So that's another one where we've talked about expat death and just the awful complications that come with expat life and grief. But I really do think that Stephanie's right. We should probably go back and have a look at it again to sort of update information. And, yeah, absolutely.
And perhaps have a more you can have sort of a more practical sort of to-do checklist that we can maybe provide or source from a group of people and just find out, you know, what would be the best thing, because sadly people have been through it. So it's good to Be able to help
absolutely. I think you're right. I think maybe, Nikki, we put a few weeks into this and we get a checklist together. We maybe interview someone in the field, like an international lawyer, and we talk to someone who's experienced in doing wills, and we'll get all that stuff together and we'll get it out, you know, in the next few weeks. So that's definitely something we should think about. So thank you, Stephanie, for that. That's perfect. Now, on to our what we're consuming this week when it comes to books, movies and telly. Nikki, you didn't finish your book, I gather.
Didn't finish the book, and it's a sad, sad, terrible story, and I am going to finish it. So when I finish it, I will.
How far have you got?
Well, I would say I'm about 30% in, and I was going, as I said, I was going to do a speed lesson. And then the lady I was going to the book club with called me and said, oh, she'd woken up with the flu. She thought she had the flu, and so she didn't think she was going to make it. So I thought, oh, phew, I don't have to go because I was going with her because she was new. And then she rang me about an hour before and said, oh, I feel much better now. I think I can.
And you were like, oh, no.
So I had... So I'd spent the day doing other things, listening to other podcasts, not listening to the book. So, but I went anyway because I thought that was important for my expat relationship side of
things. Fair enough.
So, but yes, I will. What about you? Have you read a new book?
I've just started Little Fires Everywhere, which is the book group we're doing for the Two Fat Expats Doha book group. I'm really keen to get into this one. I've only just started. So it's a little bit of motherhood secrets and following rules and where everything can go wrong. So it's called Little Fires Everywhere, and I can't tell you too much about it now because I've only just started, but I will be able to tell you because our book group isn't until another 3 weeks away, right? So I've got some time up my sleeve.
Hey, you're back in Australia, so how's the telly looking?
Oh, it is lovely. I'm back into the world of Aussie Netflix and, you know, all the cable TV on tap and everything. But of course I'm working and I've got kids here, so it's not as blissful as it seems. But I have been watching Squinters. I finished watching that on ABC iView, which is very Australian, and it's a carpooling show, but it has the fantastic Tim Minchin in it. It's got some amazing Australian actors. Jackie Weaver's in it as well. And it's Squinters, I gather, is the kind of layman's term for people that commute in the mornings.
I've never heard that term.
And it's one of those, did you ever see Christmas with the Moodies?
I can't remember. I'm going to say no.
So Christmas with the Moodies, I would desperately implore all my Aussie friends to store it in their memories and then start watching it about 6 weeks before Christmas this year, because it's basically a guy who is an expat who comes home every year for Christmas, and he comes home from London every year, and it each week is another year where he's come home, and it is fabulous. It's like the cast, you know, hints of the castle, hints of Muriel's wedding, a bit more modern day and very, very recognisable as Australian suburban life. Squinters kind of feels a bit similar in that there are stories weaved behind these stories. So it's a good one. I've watched that on ABC iView, and I think it was about a 6-part series, and I got through it very quickly. While I've been home, we have had round one of the Australian football season. So you can imagine, Nikki, I got home on I flew in on Thursday night. I arrived at the house, turned on the telly, and the first game of round one was about to start at the MCG. Aww. And it was fabulous. It was just fantastic. So, yes, I've managed to also squeeze in a live match with my girls while I've been here. But, of course, I have just consumed every piece of Aussie culture with that.
Okay. So maybe we should talk about movies now.
Yes.
Did you see any movies on the plane?
I did. Of course I did. So I watched The Shape of Water, which was just as beautiful as everybody said, and just a magical, magical movie to watch. I had stayed away from it thinking it's a fish and it's dark and it's, you know, 19, you know, whatever. So it's very hard to get the whole time frame on the movie, actually. And, you know, the girl is mute. You're thinking, well, this is tough to work out.
A fish has an affair with a mute woman. Yeah.
Yes. But it is truly beautiful. And, yes, definitely watch it. I then watched The Darkest Hour, which I absolutely loved, and infuriatingly have 20 minutes left to watch because we hit the tarmac. I still have 20 minutes left to go. Tell me, Nikki, how do I see a movie that is no longer in the cinemas but too early for it to be on iTunes?
I das weiß es nicht. I don't know the answer to that.
No.
But I do know that when you get on the plane, so mate, go to your phone, go to your calendar, put a reminder. When you get on the plane, go to The Darkest Hour and get the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Oh, but we all know it's not going to be there, don't we? All of us who travel know that I'm going to get on the plane and that movie is not going to be there.
Because it's going to be a different month. Because you've exactly. arrived in 1 month and yeah. you're departing in another.
Yeah, like we all know how this works, that even if it was the same month, for some reason I'd get on and it wasn't going to be there, because that is Murphy's Law with you know, movie watching on planes, that you will always land before it finishes and you will never find it again.
True. So I haven't watched any movies, but I want to tell you that back on Netflix this week is Santa Clarita Diet season 2.
I did see that. Yes.
Drew Barrymore is the undead. She's the zombie mother real estate realtor. And I've watched a couple of episodes, and I did, you know, the first season was hard to get into. The second season's the same, but then once you watch a couple of episodes, the whole goriness just slides off again and you just keep going. Another thing I did see on Netflix recently, which I did really enjoy, was Collateral, and it was a BBC series, and it was just 4 episodes, I think. It was a 4-part series, and it was very gritty. It was one of those BBC, you know, BBC productions are very, you know, they're real. So it starts with a pizza delivery guy being shot and killed in modern day Britain.
Yeah.
And then it has the two detectives that are investigating it. And it's very interesting because it's got a really equal balance between the female and male lead roles. There's one female detective and one male one, which I'm just becoming more aware of when I'm watching TV shows and movies now. Like what are the girls, what's their role? How good is it? Like,
yeah. Is it enough?
And then it's also very current in terms of the topic. So the pizza delivery guy, his death opens up a whole can of worms because he was meant to be a humanitarian refugee from Syria. And it turns out he's actually an economic refugee from Afghanistan. And so, it's got people smuggling. There's a gay vicar whose girlfriend is an undocumented migrant. Oh, the local politician's involved because the pizza was being delivered to his ex-wife, but she normally gets like a little extra bit in her pizza on Friday night. So it was really fascinating, but it was also very now. Like it was very what you read about in the news as, you know, issues in the UK right now. I would recommend it. If you've got it on your Netflix, Collateral.
Oh, yes. Look. All right. I'm definitely going to do that. That sounds good. My podcasts are going to drive everyone nuts because it's all about the football. And I will move on and get past it in a week. But what's happened, of course, is football season started. Everybody's jumped on the podcast wagon, as we've talked about before, Nikki. You know, every man and his dog has one now. So it's just sort of making a way through and deciding, you know, what's going to be the right one for you. But I am listening to a lot of sport podcasts at the moment. So I'm not going to bore everyone with the details because I know we have a worldwide audience, but I would tell people, if you are missing your sport, make sure you check and see if your team has a podcast, because not only may your team have a podcast, but there may be supporters who are as nuts as you who have started their own podcast, and you can listen to them as well.
Oh, my God.
I know. I listen to it all. I listen to 3 guys who are as big a supporter as I am. One's in America, and the other 2 don't even live in the state. And they'll talk about the game, and I'll sit there going, oh, yes, 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 I agree. No, I don't think that should have happened. Oh, yes, 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 I agree. Terrible. But I will move on, and I will get past it. I'm just so happy to have it back. So, yeah, I think that is just about me with my podcast, my movies, and my telly. What about you, Nikki? Have we got everything with you? What about?
I'm going to wrap it up because there are a couple of podcasts I'd like to talk about, but I don't think I got enough time to do them justice today. So I'll save them for another time.
Sounds good. Okay. All right. Well, Nikki, we will be back again next week. I cannot wait, I have to say, for this weekend of all my family under the one roof together. It's going to be incredible.
So lovely. Oh, well, really have a great time and have a hot cross bun for me because I really miss a proper hot cross bun.
Are you telling me, I know we're saying goodbye, but are you telling me the hot cross buns don't exist in Germany?
Well, I have to say there's something that looks like a hot cross bun, but it's not the same. You can't get them at the bakery. No.
All right. So a hot cross bun to me is like a what? How do you describe that type of bun? It's like what would you call it in America? I've never
like
seen
a sweet
anything.
Bun.
Yes.
Well, they do have them in America around Easter.
Yeah.
It's like a sweet flavored bun with a bit of cinnamon and then a what do they make the cross out of on the top?
I think it's like a hard kind of icing. I've only used it with an icing, like a hard icing, but I don't know. I might have to ask them at the bakery tomorrow. But the big thing is you slice them in half, put them under the griller, and then put butter on them.
And the best ones have sultanas.
Yes.
But only sultanas. No, none of that other currant and dried fruit stuff. No, no, no. Just
right.
A sultana.
Okay, I will have one for you tomorrow.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You're so kind. Meet you later.
Okay, bye.